This is Side Hustle with Luke and Omar. We'll explore what it takes to run a side hustle with talented individuals from different backgrounds and experiences. We will discuss things like taking the plunge, personal challenges, and the balancing act of maintaining a day job whilst side hustling to make the dream a reality. Now sit back, relax, as we talk to some of these amazing individuals. Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of Side Hustle Podcast. Today we have a special guest in the building, Mr. Leo Flanders.
I didn't realize I was special. Am I more special than your other guests?
You are definitely special because this is the first recording for season 3, but we still don't know when we're going to drop the episode, so...
Well, I feel honored to be here as a special guest.
Oh, definitely special. Yeah, first recording for like 6 months or something. Yeah,
so. For sure.
Oh, just quickly though, there's no S on my name. It's Flander.
Flander.
That's okay.
I beg your pardon. That's right. Like the bike brand here. Have you
seen
that?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
Flander.
Yeah. Used to be, you know, it's probably showing all of our ages. Everyone used to be like, make a joke about Ned Flanders.
Oh,
right?
Really?
Yeah. Right, obviously that eye roll. Mm. But it is interesting that it doesn't come up at all anymore. No. Simpsons just moved on. They still make it, but it doesn't come up for people anymore.
I mean, I think that age bracket has definitely moved on. They're moved on. I'm not sure what they're watching these days,
but probably more like into like Simpsons. Come on.
I don't know. Probably more like trash and reality TV. You know, they've probably moved on to that.
One can hope.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Now that we've made sure that we can pronounce your last name.
Just to say as well, Omar always gets the name wrong.
Oh, so perfect.
It's part of the mix.
Thanks. Thanks, Luke.
Leo, I mean, I'll just say that we might as well. It's just really new for me. I mean, it'll be interesting, depending on when this released, how new it is or how much I've done it. But I'm actually thinking... No, I've decided to. I just don't know how to do it, which is... we're going to start with my art practice, go by my Hebrew name as a part of kind of connecting to my Jewish identity as like part of my journey. So Avraham Vovsi. Avraham?
Avraham?
Like Abraham, but with
like Abraham? Yep.
With Avraham, yep. And then Vovsi.
Vovsi.
Yeah.
Wow.
So Leo Flander is easier than that.
Yep.
But anyway, you did a good job. If that was going to be my name, you did a good job already. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we are from the same region, so I can probably pronounce the words and stuff
that's
like
right.
that.
Yeah.
Well, hey, you've taken the intro away from me, so please continue on. This is brilliant.
Okay.
No. Awesome. So just talk us through your background. Talk us through kind of growing up and kind of doing what you're doing. And even before you do that, maybe just talk us through what you're currently doing, what you've got going. Side gigs and projects and things like that before we kind of start talking about, you know, your upbringing and things like that.
Well, I guess maybe in a general sense, I'll start there. What I do, I've done this now since I finished uni 5 years ago. It's going to be weird because I'll tell you the rest of the story later, but when I finished uni, I wanted to get a day job because I was working at like a bar. Mm-hmm. And I knew that if I kept working nights, I'm such a morning person that, you know, I would just never practice.
You burn yourself out.
Yeah. Like, you know, you do like a 1 a.m. or 3 a.m. close and, mm-hmm. and I'm not making art the next day. Like you just, it's really hard for
Absolutely.
Me. So anyway, so I got this job, a friend of mine called me up and he kind of started this, it's like online education startup.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's an alternative education startup in the sort of like entrepreneurship, social entrepreneurship area.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just transitioning from like an in-person thing into online. And my background's in film. So that's why he called. And also, different story, we made a music video when I was 18 and he was 23 and in this like heavy metal band. It was a different time.
So you were in the band as well?
No, I was the director. I was the 18-year-old director of this wild video. It's of his time.
So assuming that was your first video production kind of experience or
something? No. So that, okay, I should just finish where I'm up doing now and then I can tell you
how cool.
Yeah, because otherwise we'll know, yeah. Let's want to keep the listeners kind of able to understand. Okay, so anyway, because he called me up and long story short, it's been great.
Mm-hmm.
For the last 5 years, you know, I think coming out of uni, I knew that I wanted to pursue my art, but I also wanted something stable that I could kind of, the stability I think was important to me as well as the day bit of it. So
sure.
Yeah, and we just, so I said to him, I was like, great, sounds like fun, you know, but if we can work out a way for it to be like permanent part-time, like 3 days a week, or maybe I think I was doing 4 days a week when I started, but it was definitely not full. It was, we specifically were chatting about it. Maybe it was always 3 days. And he was like, and that kind of, and he was up for being flexible because it's a startup and he's into that. And
Did you guys know each other prior to this or?
Yeah, the music video.
The music video.
Sure, yeah. The music video got you guys together.
And then I didn't hear from him. And then like 10 years later.
Wow. Yeah, he
thought of me. That's weird. I don't know why he thought of me.
And did he just one day give you a call and say, hey, let's catch up? Or hey,
We must have been in touch. And either I just started asking people. Yeah, no, we'd been in touch the whole time. Not like really close friends, but we chatted the whole time. So maybe I was asking around for jobs because it was like the last 3 months before the end of uni or something. And I was like, oh no, you got to start now thinking about how to get
Totally.
So maybe that's actually what happened. And yeah, and I knew he had interesting stuff going on. Maybe I'd even, he must have already reached out to me because they did the in-person iteration of the Fitzroy Academy, which is the name of the job. And I actually did a little bit of filming from then. So we must have been chatting. So then I just was like, hey, do you know anyone who's like looking for a job or hiring and stuff?
So, I guess just from there, do you want to maybe dig into what that Fitzroy Academy is real quick? Because I think we've sort of lightly touched on it, but just for listeners' sake, like, what is that academy?
So basically, Fitzroy Academy is it's a little Melbourne startup. Mm-hmm. There's really just like a couple of us. Like all startups, it's impossible to explain, I guess. But anyway, you know, it's like a few different things. But essentially what it is, certainly now, is that we're interested in online education.
Mm-hmm.
We started in the area of, I guess, more specifically around entrepreneurship, social impact, digital skills, and helping people skill up in that area.
Sure.
It's kind of developed into more broadly, just social impact.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of community projects and like whatever form that takes.
It's kind of started morphing into something else that's a little bit more social.
It's a bit more, I would say, like a little bit more community based, a little bit more flexible. Okay. I mean, yeah, like sure, sometimes the thing that is created has the form of a business. So it's a bit more entrepreneurship, but sometimes it's maybe just like a campaign, you know, like a movement, like whatever it is. So we're just more flexible in terms of the kinds of people we interact with. And then on the other side, I would say we're also more generally, certainly maybe this is just me speaking, so I'll speak for myself, really interested in just like, what does it mean to learn online? You know, from like an actual, the technical word is andragogy, so adult learning or pedagogy kind of point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Like what does it actually mean to create like proper learning outcomes? As opposed to like, well, I don't want to name names of any particular companies that I feel like are more interested in making money than social outcomes.
Sure.
Education outcomes. Sure. Anyway, so the point is that, so that's what I do. So a lot of what I do for the last 5 years has been like video related. So I work with teachers. Basically what I do is I work with teachers to turn their, what they're teaching into the online equivalent.
Yeah.
We've worked with programs, we've worked with universities, accelerators. Right now, most recently, working with this Indigenous Leadership Masters. It's like, so it's Indigenous is business leadership.
Cool.
So that's Indigenous, and it's run through Melbourne Business School. So I'm working with the person who's been running it for the last 5-6 years and to transition. You know, they got it was really intense last year because they went full online. But even without full online, being able to use online components is part of what they do. So I work with all the teachers, the lecturers, transition their stuff into like what works online. And so the core of it is a video.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason why I used to just say I'm the guy that makes the videos. That was the joke I made.
Way beyond that.
Well, that's what it turned into. I think that was our biggest learning over the last 5 years is that how a lot of people start, and that's how I certainly started, and our approach to it. And the more we unpacked what does it mean to be a good teacher, I guess, be like a facilitator and to actually have learning outcomes, we're like, the video is crucial, but without the rest, it doesn't work. I guess it requires a lot. So like I did like, you know, what does it mean? Like the workshop, like the worksheets, and what does it mean to like run a, like run an online class?
It's just the research stuff in the beginning and kind of building the foundation, understanding the goals and what you're looking to achieve. And then you kind of form the narrative to push it into a video format. And then even after the at the output, I'm assuming there'll be a lot more work after that to kind of refine, adjust, or even maybe add more content to it. I think
that's actually one of the big, this is the most one of the interesting kind of, I find one of the interesting tensions, I guess, of like video-based online learning is like, this is a bit buzzwordy, but, you know, like, well, I'm trying, you know, waterfall and agile, right?
Yeah.
So like, I just don't know what if the listeners do. But anyway, so like film could not be more waterfall, like if you tried. Like, I mean, it's a creative project. It's hugely resource intensive. Like the only way to do it properly is just a waterfall. And that's actually fine. Like I think that is just the best way to do it because of how it works. But then you really, the tension there is that like, education is iterative, right? Every time you teach something to a student, you learn something as the teacher, they get right.
More.
And so that's a big tension. And so that totally, you hit the nail on the head there that like, not only do we need to make sure that the videos are as good as they can be, but we almost need to, and like these days it's like, you know, we have a big philosophy about like only film or like only make a video about something that actually should be a video. And as we've developed, what that means has changed. So like things that are only important now are only important to your specific cohort this year. If you can get away with them as like either like a live stream or in person or whatever it is, great. Something that's like, you know, it's interesting. So something that's more evergreen, for lack of a better word, or foundational. But then my lens for it, or the thing I bring to it, is I actually think that like the emotional content is the thing that is most important in education. So like the passion of the teacher will outlive what they're teaching. And so that's how my point of view.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. When I was in high school in New Zealand, I sucked at maths. Especially when it started getting towards the separation of statistics and then algebra. You know how it separates? Algebra, I couldn't get my head around it. But I had a really good teacher. I think I was in Form 5, which would have been... What would be the equivalent of a Form 5 here?
I'm not sure that it is.
Is that like... Like 17-year-olds or 16-year-olds maybe?
16-year-olds, yeah, before you get to the sixth form, and then seventh form is the last form.
Oh, so that'd be like
year 10, year 10
or year 9. Yeah.
Yeah. And to your point, I actually started sitting in the front of the class a little bit because the passion of the teacher was just contagious to me. And there was, I got her, she got me. So the questions and we were kind of bouncing off each other. So I challenged her about a particular equation, but I'm coming at it from almost like a smart ass angle because that was my mentality in school. I was just the idiot who would just crack jokes and just, you know, but
I know the feeling.
The more I did that, the more she challenged me. I was like, oh shit, someone's at my level.
So she started to understand how you learn kind of thing.
I think so. And she's like, cool, you're a smart ass, but I'm still going to educate you while I kind of get you back on this joke or whatever. And by the time you know it, I was seriously in the top three of my class, and I probably got one of the highest marks in algebra that year. And because of algebra, I got into physics because they're interrelatable, you know, with equations and kind of extracting them out and understanding it. So emotive, passion, delivery, eye contact, all that comes into it. I'm a firm believer in that.
So
with that in mind, like how I'm interested in the process of getting these like teachers and educators on board to not want to film everything, I guess, and film like the important or emotive things. Like how does that process kind of come to life?
Yeah, that's a work in progress.
Yeah.
No, I totally. I mean, I get goosebumps hearing that. I think I love that. So thanks for sharing. It's like, yeah, it's interesting. Some people get it. Like some people get it straight away. I think it is weird. I think the weirdest part is only... honestly, weird isn't the right word. I don't want to be like judgmental of anyone. So I think the trouble most teachers have coming into it, I guess one is that nobody's a video professional, like nobody's a filmmaker, right? I mean, I don't even like using the word video professional. It's a filmmaking because it's art, right? Like that's the realm you're stepping into. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying you need to be Scorsese or spend $1 million, $100 million, but that's the conversation you're in when you start making videos. Right. So I think some teachers, like, that's just not their headspace. And I think also people honestly have only seen bad online education. And I don't mean one in particular. I didn't even, honestly, even if I'm being self-deprecating, like, we, I guess, know what we're doing. But, like, I feel like we've just learned enough to know that we don't know what we're doing. Well, right? And that, like, people know what to do in online education in, like, 50 years. Yep. You know, if I'm lucky, we'll get to be a small footnote in the development of it.
Yeah, it's definitely challenging because the way you describe it, it is a form of art. It's you're trying to tell a story, trying to push an agenda, but in the end of the day, trying to provide education through that becomes a medium.
Mm-hmm.
So you're telling something through a medium, whether we're doing it in audio or video. So it's like a balancing act of, okay, cool, how do I leverage this medium to still showcase some creativity and art so I can build my portfolio, but at the same time be valuable enough to these teachers that they can go ahead and talk to their other teacher friends about me and
totally.
I can be approached by, you know, bigger and, you know, better things. So
totally.
It's like almost a balancing act, right?
And I guess on the other side, you also want the adult child, like the learner to want to learn because it's on them to keep watching it, right? And to keep consuming it.
100%. So, I mean, I guess like the way that I do it is like, I developed a process over the last kind of 5 years. I mean, like at its basic, I just kind of want to spend time with the teacher. It's very much similar. I mean, you know, like my film background and even my art, like I do kind of like, you know, I get to know people and I kind of, it's how you start doing an interview with somebody is you kind of get to know them a little bit. So there's that kind of soft, just getting to know people or whatever.
Yeah.
But I developed this process and basically what I did, I feel like such a hack, but people say it's useful and that's cool. So what I did is I took essentially script theory, like story theory, some books that I really love about like script writing and narrative from like my film days. Because you don't know my whole story yet. That makes no sense.
We're still talking about your
nine to five.
It's so interesting though. Let's keep going.
Okay, we'll keep going.
We'll go back later.
It's kind of like it's like a non-linear kind of like Chris Nolan style movie. Yeah. So anyway, so it's from my film days that you don't know about. There's a bunch of script writing books that I really love and there's some structures for like how to write. Do you want me to not look at the camera? Is that useful?
No. So, just for context, I actually got up to get my camera from the bag and I must have put you off a little bit. So I do apologize.
That's okay.
I'm trying to capture some action.
No, that's cool. I'll do my best to keep.
No, it's fine. So you just look kind of cool before when you had your hand up and you were just kind of thinking. The audience don't know what we're looking at. So Leo's sitting here with an awesome vest that's just got paint on it and just his hair and the beard just... He's just got a look going on, so I had to capture a couple of really cool
That's right. We'll try again later. It's okay.
Yeah, no worries.
So, so what I did is I took kind of like script theory or like narrative structures, some stuff there that I really like, some of my favorite stuff, and I kind of married it up with or just mashed it into, it's not fancy, just mashed it up with some kind of teaching theory that me and the other guy, Will Dable, who like
the founder
of Fitzroy Academy. We just, you know, that's kind of where he really geeks out. So he taught me a bunch of stuff about teaching theory.
Yeah.
So we just mashed them together and kind of, I created essentially a structure for a bit of learning a video normally or a series of videos. You can kind of story and teaching tends to be fractal. So you can kind of, I should explain what I mean. So like in a scene, okay, you know how like I'm sure you've heard of like narrative arcs, right?
Mm-hmm.
So narrative arc, you know, or hero's journey, whatever. You can take that idea and it is also what happens in every act of a movie or a play.
Okay.
And then you can take the same idea, so that kind of arc, so if you imagine that's one big arc and then that's, I'm drawing here in my hand, the smaller arcs underneath it. And then if you take the same idea, you can basically do the same thing in every scene.
Yeah.
So every scene has an arc. It's got a beginning, middle, and end.
Yeah.
And you could also, I guess, pull it out if you were thinking about a trilogy or whatever. Yeah, so in that sense, story can be quite fractal, right? Mm-hmm. It's the same structure.
It's like the same thing when you're creating a music beat or something, you know? There's some sort of like a... almost like a repetitive thing in the background just to kind of give you a cue on when to insert the next verse if you're a rapper, or like the next instrument or something, you know?
Totally. And I guess it's almost like, you know, with that metaphor, I'm not a rapper, so I don't know if this is true, but, you know, like the song has a structure which is made up of verses and choruses and that kind of flows in a certain way.
Yep.
But then a verse has a structure, absolutely, right? Yep. So that you know where you're sitting. Then even you could, like you said, you go further in, like a bar has a structure.
Totally.
Kind of. So turns out education is the same.
Wow.
So a student's journey, in the sense that it's not exactly the same arc, but it is one. And so a student starts in one place and ends in another place. And you could imagine that over, let's say, a year of uni, or the 3 years of uni. And then every year has an arc, and then every semester has an arc, and every week has an arc.
So, you know, so
it's if it's good teaching, right?
Like it's like absolutely. It's like an inception of arcs.
Well, it's how you can map that out then, I guess, and like that's how you sort of plan the curriculum kind of thing.
Yeah, so we do a bunch of that work with people when they're planning out their online learning or blended learning, whatever learning they're doing. So I kind of mashed up this structure, which works particularly well for videos, and it takes some stuff from Hero's Journey. I call it I made a funny article about it, which has a joke in it. It says it just wrote the Hero's Journey and I crossed it out and wrote Student's Journey.
Nice.
Thank you. So I'm very proud of that joke. Thank you. So I did this thing, and so it kind of, it's basically, this is a very long answer to how I work with the teachers. So I don't expect teachers to be artists. I don't expect them to be filmmakers. They are who they are. What they have is the content, like the knowledge and the passion, hopefully. Mm. And so the structure I designed, there's both a structure to a video and also kind of a process. So like in the same way that you kind of dive into I'm just going to change metaphors here. Because of that fractal nature of music and teaching and movies, I'll just skip around to painting. So when you paint a picture, there are many ways to paint a picture, as you know. But one approach is you start with broad ideas, broad shapes, broad ideas about colors and values, as you work on the painting, you get more and more specific. That's right. And you get more specific shapes. You get more specific tonal values.
By the way, I just did a funnel shape with my hands.
Very good. Yes, a funnel shape. It's almost like because of that idea, and also like all the books about writing scripts is exactly the same. And I don't know if that's how it works for music, but certainly like if you're writing a script, one of a really solid approach is you work out like a one-line description of what the movie is about. And then from there you take that and you work out kind of what are the acts.
Yep.
You know, what's the one act, two, three. Yep. Then there's like the kind of next one down is a series of beats. So like there's like 10 story beats in a movie.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there you work on scenes. And so in the same way you go from general to specific. And so I just did this thing with teachers where I take them through that idea. So we start with some really general ideas about like why do they want to teach and what do we want the student to learn? And then we start breaking it down into the steps of what's the like lesson about. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I break down each step into like, where does the student start to help me frame it? What are we going to do to help them solve it? Then we take them through how you do it. Wow. Here's how you kind of like some things about tips and mistakes and that kind of stuff. And also stories. So there's like the whole thing is nothing but like personal stories.
Absolutely.
Because that's what really helped people engage. Like I imagine with your teacher, every time she's being passionate, it's her, you know, you're able to see what it is she likes about it, right? And the thing,
Look, we can sit here all day.
I know.
And Luke and I can quiz you more about this because obviously the industry we come from does practice that and extracting information from people and kind of like interpreting the information in a different way. But let's put a pin in that for a second and get to understand a little bit more about what you do outside of that. Because I think there's a lot of passion and influence that you implement into your 9-to-5. But I'm more interested into to talk more a little bit about kind of what you do in parallel to your 9 to 5.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, clearly, you know, that's the thing about we're passionate about our side hustles, but we're also passionate about our job. So
absolutely.
And I think one of the ways I've been able, this is, here's a little tip for having a side hustle. I don't know. But one of the things that I talked to Will about 5 years ago, yeah, and we still do, is like, he didn't explicitly expect this from me, but I feel like it wouldn't have lasted so long. It wouldn't have been as good for as long as it did if it hadn't worked as well, which is that like, I really committed to bringing 110% for my 3 days to basically make it worth it for him, you know? Yeah. And I'm not bragging or anything. Like, I just really committed to it.
I mean, you can see the passion oozing out of you. Like, your eyes are lighting, yeah, up as you speak about this. Yeah. I can see you getting, you know, your eyes are getting a bit watery because you're quiet, you know, really into it. So I definitely get that. And it seems like you've got a lot of buy-in into the mission and the goal of what you're trying to do.
Yeah. So what I actually mean is I committed to do that so that I could have 3 days spare to do my art. So it's almost like, I guess that's the thing. That's why I can speak quite passionate about it. So I appreciate that. Like, cause you know, I did really commit myself for 3 days, mm-hmm, and then I just put it down and I do my art for 3 days. Yeah. And I think that's how I've been able to manage a vaguely healthy lifestyle.
That's all right. We'll interview Will after this and we'll make sure, you know, we'll,
that's right. He's like, nah, that ain't gonna waste his space. So the side hustle, which like we're kind of talking about, in my mind, it's flipped. So this is the main thing I do, which is that I'm a painter. I'm an artist.
You're an artist first.
I'm an artist first.
Education facilitator later.
And ironically, it definitely started as a job. Will won't be mind me saying that. It started as like a job in the sense of like, you know, like what a job is. It's a thing you go and do.
Yeah.
And it just so happens that it turns out I love teaching and Will's a great boss, great collaborator. Wow. So it's been really fun and passionate and clearly developed into something more than just a job.
Absolutely.
But at the end of the day, I think an artist is core to who I am.
Mm.
Mm. Well, when you told that to me like last time we spoke, that like really blew my mind, and like I couldn't wait to get, once we got off the phone, jump straight on the phone with Omar to tell him, because like I never thought of it reframing it in that way before. So what caused you to sort of frame it in that way? Was it like more of like a heart thing, or like what was the like in the deep in your soul, or like how did you come to that realization, I guess?
It's not a great answer, but in a sense, I've always had that idea. I guess I had very encouraging parents.
Mm.
And so growing up, I made a lot of movies. I was a film kid at school. You know, it just so happened that...
you were born and raised here in Australia?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So my parents moved here from the US, mm-hmm, right before I was born. So I've got an older brother born in the US, and then I'm the only Aussie in the family.
Sure.
And then Australian born in the family.
Yeah.
Just randomly, or like just so happens that both my parents are working full time and
in the arts.
No, at all. Not even a little bit. My mom's an epidemiologist,
wow,
which is really cool because people know what that is now.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, up until last year, nobody knew what that was. No. Now everyone knows what that was. And my dad's I don't even know. So I always used to say growing up he was a computer programmer,
okay,
but like the tech industry has changed so much that I don't even like, because he started, like he soldered his own computer, right?
Oh, wow.
70s, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know what he calls himself now. Okay. I always remember because people would be like, I'd be like 12, whatever. They'd be, you know, be like, oh, he's, you know, just computer programming.
Yeah.
So anyway, so not at all in the arts at all.
And your brother?
Ironically, is it ironic? Coincidentally?
Yeah.
He, amazing musician all the way growing up. Really.
Wow.
But also freaking genius. I mean, I guess, sorry, I should, that sounds, musicians are also geniuses. This guy is a math genius.
Right.
So he, he started year 12, the final year of school,
mm-hmm,
3 years early.
Gotcha.
That's wow.
Yeah. He's very, very
beyond
smart.
Beyond his years.
And he actually moved to San Francisco a couple of years ago. He works in like, I don't know what his current job is, but he's definitely working with algorithms. Wow. I guess everyone is. Okay. But like, okay, that's the vibe.
Somewhere,
you know,
in Silicon Valley.
That's right.
That life.
Yeah.
He's doing his best. Yeah, yeah. That's the thing here. Yeah. So, okay.
So you've come from a family of very passionate, focused, almost, you
totally,
know, doers and
I will say also, my mom, and I think about it, my mom did a, so I mean, she trained as a researcher and that's what she does, but she was a, I shouldn't say she's not an artist because she did her master's of fine art here at RMIT. So after they moved here. And so growing up, she had, there was a dark room at home and so there were cameras around.
There
and then
go.
Also my, there was a person who was like an exchange student who was living with us,
okay,
exchange, when I was, so I, when I was really young.
Mm.
And she lived with us and was studying here. And then would take care of me a little bit.
What was she studying?
Well, she was studying film and television at RMIT.
There you go.
And so I definitely credit her with some early film passion.
Wow.
Because she had like a big VHS camera and so I had them, like I was making stop animation Lego when I was like 5.
Wow.
Nice.
Which, I mean, kids these days do it all the time, but it was pretty cool. Like I had a lot of fun. So I was totally hooked on that.
So you think that's the thing that sparked the, well, passion to kind of make, you know, motion?
I think so. And it like that, and then mom had some cameras around, so I kind of had that around. And then when I was, because I got a camera for my bar mitzvah.
Okay.
Which really helped.
Yeah.
Like a little camcordery like thingy, and I like mini DV tapes, and my mom had one of the Power Max, maybe, because she was doing a photo editing,
sure,
so I was able to use iMovie. But I must have asked for that, which means I must have had access to a camera maybe through school, through a friend or something, because I must have been playing with cameras before that.
Sure.
Otherwise, I wouldn't
have
known to ask
for it. So through playing around with cameras,
yeah,
and kind of seeing it in your environment and set up at home, how did that translate into the type of art you do now? How did the two worlds meet? Did they collide? Did they meet? Did you pick up on, drop one? Are they still in a line? I mean, obviously they're still in parallel. Just
so,
talk us through that.
Yeah, yeah. I'll try and do it quick because it is convoluted and I'm a bit of a rambler. So looking back, I think my original passion was fine art painting. Do you know Magic Cards, Magic the Gathering?
Yes.
Do you know that? You know it?
Yeah.
Great.
I don't.
It's like a real nerdy card game.
Okay.
Also Warhammer. Do you know Warhammer? Mm-hmm. Heard of that?
Yeah,
Luke,
yeah.
Luke is
great,
a more nerdy one out of,
okay,
out of us.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
I got a set and I tried to paint them, but it was so hard. So all of mine are still just gray.
Perfect. Yeah, yeah. And so I did that. And also Magic Cards are like really beautiful fantasy art. So it's a game, it's a card game, but on every single card, like half the card is taken up with very evocative, beautiful. Before everything was digital, there were probably a lot of them were painted in oils. So I had them growing up. There was a guy at Sunday school, I think, when I was 5. And it's a game for a couple years older, so I don't know how well I was playing it when I was 5
sure.
or 6. But I had this art around.
Is it like
me.
Pokemon cards? Or?
It's the precursor to Pokemon
okay.
cards. Yeah.
Okay.
So like it is the thing that all other card games are based on.
Gotcha.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It started in 1992 and then, yeah, Pokemon just like exploded the whole idea
sure.
of it. Yeah. And so, yeah, it's exactly that. So I think that was an early passion
mm-hmm.
in terms of just looking at the art. And I do have this sense, although I don't know if it's ever spoken about, that probably I tried to draw or make art and I couldn't. And then the cameras were around me. So you know how young people will consciously or unconsciously kind of fit into boxes or do what, you know, especially if like, you know, early school, you're like, oh, that kid can draw, that kid can do sports.
Yeah.
You know, that bit,
mm-hmm.
that kind of little
categorization
damaging,
and
that whole kind
yeah.
of gross bit. So anyway, because of that, I moved into just pretty much, I just did cameras. So I don't remember that happening, but that's now how I feel like, that's how I'd like to paint the picture of my life. So I did cameras all the way, high school photos and videos, got really into film, moved to, I made a feature film, as in like a 90-minute movie, when I was 18, after I made the music video for Will. I got together some friends, we shot in my old school for 3 weeks,
mm-hmm.
and made it. It's a big undertaking to make a feature film, by the way. Like, yeah, it's of course. Very hard to understand. Like,
is that including like the story, or the script, and
yeah,
everything?
Yeah, yeah. Me and some friends wrote it. We had some actors involved.
Extras, location. Yeah,
yeah.
It
wow.
was pretty weird. There's one day that we rented. We got a special effects guy. We rented a bunch of guns, and like there was an armorer, like they could shoot real blanks.
Wow.
Wow.
Obviously, if you're gonna make a movie, you got to hire a gun person.
Yeah.
Clearly, and we even hired a rain machine, which is like a big water. It's like a big pipe, essentially, where
where'd you guys get your money from?
Yeah, how did you fund
some
this?
Some hardcore like equipment.
Yeah, a lot of like saving, and day jobs, and we raised some money through our like network, like before crowdfunding. We just a little bit, and then obviously the bank of our collective families and extended families just scraped together. And it was not heaps of money.
Sure,
like basically that day that had all the fun stuff, that was where all the money went.
Gotcha. Yeah.
You know? Okay. So just to skip ahead, I really want to get through this story so we can talk about painting.
No, take your time.
Then I couldn't work out how, I made some other movies, but I couldn't really work out how to break into the film scene here.
Okay.
Which is, its own particular beast, but because of my US passport and everyone in the film business wants to be in America. Mm. And I was like, well, if I'm trying to break in anywhere,
you might as well just shoot back home.
I'll just see what happens, right? And so I lived in LA for a couple of years, which was an adventure. And I worked on a bunch of movies and like just really low budget stuff. And I just kind of tried it out and it was really intense. And all of the, if you've ever been to America, it's a really intense place. Mm. And
yeah,
really made me proud of being Australian in a lot of ways.
Yeah, you know? Well.
Not that there's anything wrong with America. And obviously my extended family is American. But it really made me appreciate some stuff about Australia that I wouldn't have without the contrast of living in another country.
Yeah.
And vice versa, I guess, really. Anyway, long story short, I wanted to get into, so if you want to like, there's a few creative positions in movies and a whole bunch of less creative positions. Less creative is not the right word, but like, you know, in terms of like, the director, for lack of a, is the artist, for lack of a better word, of a movie. There, if you just, so like, and so if you want to really kind of creatively tackle stuff,
it's their vision. The rest are all facilitating and making sure they follow the vision.
Totally.
Is there a way to break through? Like, can you sort of go above and beyond to like get their attention type thing?
Yeah, it's have rich parents.
Okay.
Yep.
That's just the way to break through.
Yep.
It's like, I mean, like honestly, that's it.
Yeah.
So
it's quite a superficial industry, isn't it?
Yeah, and like, It's kind of weird, superficial. It's like the raw nerve of the capitalist system in a weird way. Like, I mean, maybe Silicon Valley's giving a run for its money these days, but certainly before that, there's something really like,
exclusive and
like technically people have broken in without doing that. Like obviously people get lucky, like somebody sells their script for like, and each era of filmmaking has its, in terms of like maybe 10 years, has its kind of like ways to break in, and a few lucky people get break in that way because it's the new way. You know, I think it's probably similar to startups. It's like, it was like in the 90s or in the 80s, the way to break in was sell a script. Mm. And a few people sold a script for like $1 million. Like you went from a nobody to $1 million script. And that was like in the
80s. That's crazy.
And then the market got flooded and then the studio stopped doing that. And then after that, it moved to kind of Sundance. Have you heard of Sundance?
Yep.
You know, so right. So, and that was the way. It's like you make your own short film, you screen Sundance, and then the studio's exec says, hey, here's $1 million, make a movie, or $100 million, or whatever.
So you went to LA.
Great. Sorry. Yes.
You spent some time there.
Thank you. I went to LA, spent some time there. It was fine. It was fun, but I wasn't doing anything kind of particularly creative. I was working in kind of more production logistics area and I wanted to be,
were you like a runner or something?
I moved up to what's called like production office coordinator. So I was running the office, in some movies and stuff. But yeah, I wasn't doing anything. So basically what I thought, well, like one of the departments is called the art department. The art department, broadly speaking, is responsible for like the stuff that you see in the movie, right? Like props and sets and and that's the stuff I love. So I was like, well, if I'm going to not do what I want to do, as in direct, I might as well be working in the area I like.
Awesome.
And so I wanted to study. So I was like, well, maybe I'll study drawing because like I could do concept art or stuff like that. That's kind of.
So your art kind of derived from the art department. On a show set or a movie set.
100%.
That's how you started kind of getting... That's crazy because I was an extra on Spartacus for about 3 months or so.
Awesome.
I was a featured extra and I know exactly what you're talking about because sometimes I spend hours on end for them to put makeup on me and like gash wounds and stuff like that. And there's a lot of talent in that. You cannot take that away because you're literally... They're putting art on you. Mm. And it's not just simple makeup. They're very diligent in terms of how they're putting stuff on you. And it's just, by the time you know it, you're like, wow, I look like I should be hurt. You know, if you've got a massive gash down your face, it's so freaking believable.
Then it has crazy. To last for the scene as well, right?
It has like to last for the scene. Like, yeah. On a hot day, they'll come and touch it up.
Or like and the camera's you know? like 10 centimeters away from your face. That looked really good.
It's not.
I should be clear. Sorry. There's heaps of art in movies. And the thing that I realize is in all the other departments, this is why I started studying drawing, was if you don't have a technical skill, that's when you end up in production. Right. So if you know how to do makeup, it's not easy to move up in the makeup world, but you just learn how to do makeup and you get lucky and you work in makeup. Or like if you're a cinematographer or if you're in art department, like if you just have a technical skill, that's your way in. Yep. But because my technical skill is directing.
It's a much creative...
There's no like director, like you can't.
There's not a path to get there.
That's right.
It's like becoming an actor, right?
Yeah, you just kind of have to.
You just have to keep doing it until you get your big break.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So
I wanted to.
Arts department, and then you started studying.
That's right. And so I moved home to study because it's, you know,
you came here back to Australia.
Yeah, because it's free, and in America, we'll bankrupt you.
Yeah.
Basically. That's basically why I moved home.
Yeah.
Although, you know, I was ready for a change. LA is a tough place. So. Moved home, did a 3-year degree. Illustration was the degree. It was really cool. It was kind of halfway between fine art and it was like more skills based than some fine arts degrees, which are very much like you need to kind of already know how to do a thing and they kind of help you with, give you like a studio space and kind of conceptualize stuff.
Yeah, help you kind of define and craft.
That's right.
Specialty.
Whereas I didn't have the skills, so I wanted to learn the skills. Sure. But then like a graphic design course, they tend to be too technical and not quite enough arty. So it's right there. It's a really interesting course. Loved it. And what happened was about 2.5 years in, one of my teachers, who is an amazing oil painter, she was like, based on the stuff you're trying to do, I hadn't done any painting. I had done life drawing every week. Loved that. Life drawing is really fun. Flipping hard, but so much fun.
Yeah.
And then I've been trying to do digital painting, digital art. And she was like, you should just try oil painting. And I was like, nah, it's too messy. And she was like, I think you should just try it.
Mm.
And anyway, I did. And the rest is history. It's just, I loved it. I loved everything about it. I love, because it was the kind of art I was looking at and wanting to do, which is why she said, you should try it.
The fine arts and the fine arts
and like the stuff in museums and magic cards. And, and I was just either not doing it or I was doing it digitally, which is, personally, I think it's too hard to learn. Like, transitioning from non-digital art to if what you want to do is something that looks like oil painting, which I wanted to do, I found it too hard to learn the fundamentals of kind of painting fundamentals in a digital system. I think, and I don't particularly want to do digital painting now, but if I did, I think my guess is it would be easier to make the transition because the way the digital tools are set up is they're set up by people who know how to paint.
Yep.
Yep. Traditionally.
Yep.
So point being, she knew that that's what I wanted to do and then and it just changed my life.
Wow.
Obviously, if you see the photo of me, like clearly I'm just covered in paint now. So that's how I got to making my art. So I finished I love painting and I thought, I love painting. I love people. I was particularly interested just I think portraits. So there's something about, you know, people and their stories.
Okay. If you had to define yourself or if you had to put a name or even just call it out, what type of, I know you like oil paintings and kind of that's the art that you're into, but is there a specific category that you were, that you can kind of put yourself in, go, cool, I'm that type of artist, or is there a name for it?
Well, Yes, I don't know how useful the names are. So I usually say I'm an oil painter, or I say I'm a portrait artist.
Portrait.
Because certainly I'm only painting portraits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe at some point I won't, but for now it's all I care about. So I'm definitely only painting portraits
of actual people,
of real people. Yeah, yeah, I love that.
Dope.
Sometimes I guess technically the art style that I paint in is sometimes referred to as academic, mm-hmm. as in academic, like the French or it's either English or French now, like the Academy of Arts, which was invented in like the 1800s. Yep. There's a particular style that you see in museums.
There's a process.
There's a process where I don't actually, I'm actually a real academic artist would be like, you're full of shit, mate. Because I don't actually do that. But I guess aesthetically, that's where I'm at. The and then I'm sort of, I'm learning some of those techniques. Sure. So I'm not doing as good as a real academic painter, but yeah, anyway, so could call me that. The other word that I like to use, which is again, not a real word. Uh-huh. So is it helpful? I don't know. Collaborative portrait. No, I'm a portrait artist, but I make what are called collaborative portraits, which is a thing that I invented.
Which you're collaborating with the subject.
Exactly.
Dope.
So I don't think I invented that thing, but I haven't heard other people use that. Like, I think a lot of people do. Well, I don't know. I very explicitly, that's the thing.
But you're the first one who's said it here.
So. There we go. Thank you.
That's amazing. Yeah,
thank you.
There's so many questions, so many things to dig into, but I want to go back a little bit. So I did a communication design course. So I was more on the digital side. Before, when you were still talking about how your lecturer or your teacher was like, why don't you just try oil? Like, what does practically that mean? Like, when, like you sort of mentioned, you didn't want to get messy and you didn't want to try it. But when you became to time to actually try it, like, what does trying it mean? Like, practically, like, you have to buy all the equipment, and the canvas, and the oil. Or like, how does it work?
I'm trying to remember. So I guess I was lucky because I was in the middle of a degree. So I think the first thing that happened was there was an assignment in her class. And it was to make a bit of art, you know, they were like, there was some specifics about it. I forget what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And so she said, well, I think for this, you should try oil painting. So that's like maybe how it came about. And I was like, oh, okay. So I might've ended up going and buying everything. So for oil painting, the stuff you need is you need oil paints, which is just, there's a particular, so like paint is a pigment and then what's called a binder or a medium. And so oil paint, the medium, maybe it's called binder. The binder is oil. That's why I call it oil paint. Mm-hmm. So it's just pigment mixed with oil. If it's watercolors, it's this thing called gum arabic and it's water soluble. And if it's acrylic, I don't know, some chemicals and stuff. So that's wood paint. So I buy that. Just in case you need an art lesson, why not?
That's good.
Okay. That's amazing. Yeah, yeah.
I think there were probably brushes there at school because we had art supplies. You need more oil. So, because if you want to like, you know, if you're like painting regular, like acrylic or watercolor, you like add more water and then you can get more paint. Like it kind of goes. So, if you want to do that, you need to use more oil. Medium, and then you need a solvent which will help you wash your brushes.
Yep.
So brushes, paint, oil, solvent, and something to paint on. So your choices for painting on are, you can do a stretch canvas, which is what I like.
Mm-hmm.
You could also do a canvas on board, which is just the same canvas but glued straight onto a board. Sure. You can also like prime anything. So you could like prime just straight up board. Mm-hmm. People paint on just like wood. I did that towards the side, gave that a go because it's cheaper. So I went to Bunnings and prime some boards. It's so heavy though at the end. Like the paintings were just like so heavy. I didn't really think it through. So I did that. And then so for that project, I don't know. I know what I did, but I don't know why I did. Like, I don't remember what the thing was. I did this portrait of a woman, a friend of mine. She was an actor. And I just got, this is weird. Maybe this is my film coming back in. It was like, I just got her to like emote. And so we went through some different emotions and I took photos as she did. And then I just found a picture of this like kind of strange emotion that was hard to read because it was between the transitions of a couple of different emotions. And so I got that photo reference and then I set about trying to paint it and my teacher helped me and I painted it. and it took a long time. I made heaps of mistakes, and then it was done. And
yeah, yeah. Well, the reason why I'm interested that's amazing to hear. The reason I'm interested in it is because, like, essentially that's your first oil painting, right? So then, yeah. So like, was there any moment where you like canned it and started again, or you just kept building over the top, or like, because and in that moment, what sparked to be like, this is the medium that I.
I wish I remembered a bit more about the feelings. I think I definitely was a struggle because I wasn't sure what I was doing, and like, it is not the easiest of. It is forgiving. I find it to be a bit forgiving. Like, one of the things is nice. Maybe this helped me keep going. Was that one of the things that's like really intense if you're working in like, if you're painting watercolor. You put down a mark and that's it. That's all you get, right? Because of the way that it soaks into the paper. And sure. With acrylic, there's the same feeling because the acrylic paint dries quite quickly. Yep. So I'll find you like mix up a color, you paint it, and then it's like dry. Mm. Whereas oil takes like a full day to dry. So in some senses, I find it to be quite forgiving because you put it on, eat an entire sandwich after washing your hands, come back. Take it off, just move it around, put something else on top of it. Like, so I wonder if that helped me.
Mm.
You maybe expand and add and do different things. Yeah. And if you don't like it, then there's still space to correct it.
I think so. Yeah. For me, that's why I find it to be a bit forgiving. Mm. Like, you could like, I mean, like, I don't think I ever did fully wipe it down. Like, I did just build on it. Like, I would just try for a bit and be like, how's it going? And then she'd come over and be like, great, you know, that's a bit weird. Try that, you know.
Do you mean you can literally wipe it off?
While it's dry, so while it's open or wet, you could just dry it. You could straight up dry and wipe it off. It fully comes off.
Yeah, well, I never realized that. So this actually kind of circles back to what you were mentioning earlier about that sort of iterative process. Like, it's kind of an iterative process that I'm hearing, I guess. Like, you can sort of make mistakes. It's okay to make mistakes and then build on top of that type of thing.
So I will, yes and no. Yes, agreed. I'll just answer it in a slightly different way. So the process I use, so you could do that. You could put some down and you could iterate on it by like wiping it off.
Mm.
The other thing about oil painting, and you can do it with other paints, you can do it with acrylic as well, but one of the other nice things about oil paint is you paint it in layers. So, and I think also my other job at the same time influenced me, because I think that, you know, in your brain, they kind of, I would imagine this would come up for other side hustle people, like they cross-pollinate all the time. Mm. And so I was learning agile at my job. I was learning agile so I could work agile and teach helping somebody make an agile lesson, right? So agile is on the brain. And you know that thing in agile about it's not just iterating, but you want to get to that quote unquote, I don't know what you call it. I guess, is it called MVP? But anyway, it's like that thing of like, you're working from finished.
Doing sprints to get to a viable product.
That's right. And you're always kind of working from finished iterations.
Mm-hmm.
So what ended up happening was I developed my portrait practice. The way I was approaching it was I wasn't wiping things down, because the other thing about oil is you can just paint on top of it, right? You could just put more paint on top.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So I would always try and, in my mind, finish the whole canvas in a full sitting. So at least kind of make an attempt at every bit of my painting. So this wasn't the first time. I don't remember how I did it the first time. I think I just kind of YOLO'd it. But suddenly, very quickly, that was the thing I developed, was I'd be like, again, going back to what we're talking about, kind of roughing it out, but roughing out in a full sense. Because there are other people who kind of go in a more, the other way is to paint. Like, it's a heap of ways to paint. Sometimes people will just like fully work on this bit and then they'll fully work on this other bit.
Seems like you've developed your own process, your own way, and potentially someone might even hit you up and be like, hey, can you teach me on you know?
Well, if you go to my
if
you go to my website, oilportraits.org,
which is what I'm trying to get to.
Correct. You can see each of the layers of my iteration. Yeah. So as you look at the paintings, I did a thing. That's probably why I wanted to develop it like the website like that, because it's fun for me to watch the way that the paintings grow. And I think it's fun for other people too.
So. It's so good. Yeah. That's what really got me.
Here we go.
So talk us through the 3 days that you've got out of the week that, you know, that allows you to focus on your art, where you are currently, where you're looking to take it, you know?
That is hard. So
how many portraits in? How many have you painted so far?
Oh, where's my phone? I can tell you. I have a, do you know Airtable?
Yeah.
I've got an Airtable that has all of my hours that That's I tracked amazing. For the last, like, whenever I started.
Yeah.
I want to say, I'm like, it's 105, I think.
Wow. Of a duration of?
5 years.
Yeah, wow. Yeah,
I'm okay. up to like 3,000 hours, I think.
Far.
So, I think.
That's cool that you track that.
Yeah, I want to say it's like 110. I'm
okay,
up to.
Okay.
So,
so 110 yeah. portraits later, yeah. a website.
And the reason I track the hours, both because it's fun and I'm a nerd,
uh-huh.
but also because it was a nice little hack where it's like, well, how do you know if a painting is good, especially when you're learning? It's really hard to tell. But if your metric for getting better is hours spent at a canvas, it doesn't matter how good the painting is, because if you spent 7 hours there, you feel good. So that was my hack to getting good. I just was like, I don't 100% like believe in the 10,000 hours, as though like if I get from 9,999 to 10, I'll somehow magically be better.
Yeah.
But that number, and I think I read about Picasso, you made 35,000 works, including 1,800 paintings. I don't particularly even love Picasso, but that's a fuckload. I don't know, sorry. Great, yep. fuckload of paintings. Yep. So I just thought, well, if that's where I set my bar, it gives me plenty of time to get there and I can kind of chill out about it. Like I can just be on my own journey because I'm like, if I don't need to be good until I've painted 1,800 paintings and 10,000 hours, great. And so, yes, I just started tracking my hours. So I could be like, oh, this week I painted 10 hours.
Yep.
So in answer to your question, the main thing I try and do is spend time in front of the canvas, putting paint on canvas. I think for my emotional health and to feel like I'm getting movement on whatever I'm working on, I've noticed that's the most important thing I can do. So like last year, because of COVID, I did way less painting and it was really an emotionally tough year because there's a kind of therapeutic feeling to like putting paint on canvas. So that's one thing I try and do. So if I have 3 days, like, I try and if I've got stuff to work on, I usually prioritize that. So I might start in the morning with that. Like if I've really got stuff to go on, then like a lot of paintings to do because of the point of the project I'm at, like it tends to be, a bell curve. So like towards the start of a portrait, you know, like today I painted for like 2 hours, but when I'm in the meat and potatoes of a painting, I can spend like probably 6 hours over 8 hours of the day painting.
Okay.
So, and I'll try, I'll probably, if I'm in the middle of a project, I'll do that and I'll just be what I'm doing.
Yep. So it seems like the art of it, you're still kind of keeping it your outlet or your kind of passion just to kind of fuel your energy and you kind of your inner self with that. But you've also got a website at the same time as that. So there's almost two different streamlines of, I think, activities happening at the same time.
It's not just one. It's more than that. Well, it's annoyingly, it is just one. So what happened, just a brief, see if I can do this story briefly.
Mm-hmm.
I got into an art residency, which is when a company or a place pays you.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, it was really cool. It was interesting because it was a tech startup. It was Redbubble.
Wow.
They were doing them downtown. And so I was there for a year, and, 6 months. And they paid me a stipend and I got to kind of pitch a project and it involved engagement with the employees, and I did some surveys and worked out a social issue that they were interested in, kind of they were passionate about environment. Then I found some people who were working in that area to make portraits with, the Jabrung mob, who are doing this kind of lands activist sovereignty movement out near Ararat, still there, protesting some government work. So I went out there and I made work with them, and it was a kind of a response to what the people at Redbubble who were paying me were interested in, and I shared the process with them. Mm-hmm. So that was the best. So what that was both the painting, as in the finished artifact, but I think the key thing for my art practice that it allowed me to understand, and it will answer your question, is that the context of the painting, especially my work, which is really story dense, it's collaborative, the process of the painting is as important as the finished artwork. And if I can help people engage with it, it makes for a better art experience, for lack of a better word. Absolutely. So I was able to use the support and time of that residency to work with a mate of mine who was so kind, and we kind of collaborated. He's the coder, and we made this website. I got a film crew involved. We made documentaries. Because my film background, that's this. In answer to your question from an hour ago, it turns out that I've now been adding my film experience and some filmmaking back into my art practice in terms of my painting practice as a way to help people engage with the work. So, you know, I joke that I make the DVD extras of my paintings because I love DVD, you know, grew up on DVD extras. So, which is to say, so there is that is the other part of my practice. And so one of the things that I'm really working on now is like, and maybe this is similar for other people's side hustle, but like there comes a point, like it's been so good. Let's see if I can say this in a sentence that's useful. It's been so good to have the support of my day job, and it's allowed me to really not think about, not that not think about money, but not think about the financial outcome of what I'm doing, which has allowed me to be more, I don't want to say like true to my art, because that sounds a bit weird, but just like I can just make whatever work I want to make. And so I got to make the kinds of work that I wanted to make. So oil portraits, which is not particularly a good way to make money. I got to try the techniques I wanted. I got to paint the people I wanted who, you know, I ended up, what I did is led me towards painting people who couldn't afford paintings. Because I'm like, well, if I just want to practice, you know, to make my 1800 paintings and my 10,000 hours, and I don't want to paint people, and I know I don't care about charging them because I got this day job, then I'll just paint people who don't get, can't afford it. Cause like that sounds like the most fun. And I got to work with people who are interesting.
Yeah. See what I'm picking up here with your day job, your art and everything. There's a genuine sense of doing good, whether it's education, whether it's making people feel good about themselves, but it also comes from how you live your life. I think you're in a very unique position where you've identified, you figured out who you are as a person. From what I'm hearing.
Thanks.
And you've positioned yourself in a way where you've got a decent setup where you've got a 9-to-5 that's intertwined with your art. There's the education, there's the emotional side of it, there's making people feel good about themselves, and then kind of like they're not necessarily butting heads, they're intertwined in a very weird and unique way, but it's just working. And like the more you do hit, the more this picks up. I'm pointing with my hands between the art and the 9-to-5, and they kind of grow together.
It's interesting because retroactively that's how it looks, and I agree with you, but I definitely can't take, well, maybe I can take credit for it, but I feel like the only real useful decision I made was the decision to do both. And I think I remember the idea of committing to doing both, because previously I had never had a job for 5 years. You know, as a creative person, I just do whatever, or like I just get jobs until
you get by.
You get by, or you know, until I could quit and then do what I really wanted to do. That's why I'm an artist at heart, because I've always been that's my feeling, is the jobs are what let I do them until I can afford to do what I really want to do. That's good. Yeah, I think that's where that comes from.
Yeah, but even our questions in terms of how you balance the two, or you know, how you go about giving one thing more attention to the other, is probably redundant, because it seems like you're building them up at the same time in a very seamless, effortless way. It's not forced. You don't need to give attention more thing to the next, because you're at peace with them going back and forth. It's like a harmonic, I don't know if that's even the word, but it's like a very easy to watch ping pong game, or like a tennis match, back and forth,
it's like they're enhancing each other to a degree without the effort, I guess, like seeing the opportunity to enhance.
Totally. And so I totally agree. I guess I feel weird taking responsibility for that, it could be true and maybe I did do that, but it, because I feel like they've grown, like, and maybe this was the, maybe if I did anything right, it was that concept of committing to the separation of just being like, I'll do this and I'll do this and I'll give 100% to kind of both in a kind of no holds barred kind of way. And they've grown together. So at the start, it wasn't the same. Like at the start, I wasn't doing any video. I was probably avoiding video. I was still burnt out from LA, which really made me never want to make video. Like I it was very much, there's no passion in the film I was making, even the Academy. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, it was fun to work with Will, but I didn't get anything about the film passion. And so my painting was my painting. My art was my art. My work was my work. And yeah, I guess it's no, maybe it is. So they've grown to, they have, they get closer and closer. And now, like, I'm thinking about education as part of my art too.
Yeah.
Like,
because the whole collaboration thing of, and talking to your subject and kind of talk, you know, working out how this thing is going to finish and the end product. So you're both satisfied. You're getting satisfaction because you're putting in the hours and it's therapeutic for you. And they're receiving an awesome piece of art because they've never probably had that experience before. But just going back in terms of balancing the two, there was probably more friction when you first started because it was just like, cool, I'm selling out 9 to 5, 3 days. Not necessarily selling out, still trying to figure out how they're going to work. And you probably made the practical decision just to go, fuck it, I'm just going to go with this because it's where I am right now. But then the more you probably practice your art, the more you're like, cool, I can see there's an art form here as well. And you started taking from this bucket, putting it into the next one, vice versa. And you kind of, that's why I mentioned you probably had a really cool setup that you implemented without even knowing, because it's just two different worlds from two different backgrounds and experiences and expectations, teaching and art. Like, yeah, you can teach art, but it's perfecting the art of learning and the art of teaching with physical art. Like, get the fuck out of here. How do you even do that? You know what I mean? Like, and it seems like now you talk about it, it makes perfect sense.
Totally. Yeah. No, when you say it, it makes it sound like I'm a genius. Like, totally. I it's cool. Like, I think you're spot on. I think, you know, like, I can see, like you said, one of the really clear moments, which is working with my subjects helped me work out how to work better with my teachers. And then the vice versa would be kind of thinking about what we're teaching and how to communicate it with the idea of the end student in mind helped me think about when it came time to expressing my art, exhibiting my art. You know, that's what led me to probably like a lot of why I like started making videos about it, about the art. And then there's technical stuff, like all of my interview skills from my teaching. Like, I had this good experience this year. So after my residency, then COVID happened. But the other thing was that I now had these like big dreams that like, oh, I want to make this kind of art, but it does require more essentially capital than I have access to. So like, it's not for me because I've still got my day job, but now I want to employ people. I want to like have my video editor and I want to have my producer and I want to have all these other people to make a kind of more fuller art experience and have all these collaborators because it's just fun. And that's now coming up against the fact that my wage hasn't changed tenfold or whatever.
Sure. And I bet you we've only scratched the surface in terms of what you want to do. It's probably unfair to categorize you into a facilitator of producing videos to teach students and help teachers. And then you're a painter. You probably have a vault of things that you've wanted to do and you've done in the past that we probably haven't even
maybe tapped into. But I definitely the main thing I care about is painting. So like, if all you remember from me is that I'm interested in oil painting, then like that's the main thing.
I don't think it's a painting. I think
stories.
For you to define yourself as a painter, by all means.
Yeah.
What I'm getting from it is far beyond that. There's a different psychology to it. You're working more with human beings, and there's a lot of emotion involved in it. Whether you're even the conversations that you might be having with your subject, I'm not around for that, but I'm assuming in that there's probably therapy in that, because you're the way you talk to your teachers and you try to extract ideas and stuff from them, you have to relate, right?
The most surprising thing that happened to me through painting, making paintings with people, is that it's and this is beautiful. Like, it's my favorite bit of the painting, is that it's an intensely, it can be an intensely powerful and I think ultimately therapeutic experience to have somebody paint a portrait of you, like especially one that you feel like expresses who you are. And that's what I do. And like, I live for the fact that people see it, their paintings, and are overwhelmed and like cry. Honestly, I love it. It makes me, it's like, I don't know, like I'm going to make people cry. Yeah. But like, I think that that was such a surprise and it's so beautiful to get to be.
It's almost like a feel good session. Hey, come through, have a wine.
Yeah. Have a painting.
Yeah.
Also, they get to keep the painting in the end, do they?
Yeah, I get, again, because I'm interested in, and I don't, it's oil, realistic portraits of real people is not how you should try and make money in painting. It's just very hard to sell because it's very hard to be like, if it was your wife or your mother or your father or whatever, easy. But if it, or your children, super easy. But if it was just a person, you know, unless they're a celebrity and you can kind of connect or it's a bit more graphic, it's really hard to sell. So. Yeah, I mean, again, I'm just interested in making the practicing and sharing the experience. And I think all of that has freed me up to also kind of make more political art because I'm, again, I do need to work out a way to make money. So if anyone wants to give me money, please just send your cash my way. But that, and so one formative painting I made is with this performance group called Hot Brown Honey. Amazing, amazing. Incredible performance group of First Nation women, Australian group. And it's all about it's a really powerful bit of art, performance art about the stories of black and brown women in Australia.
Yeah.
Amazing. And I just reached out to them. This was a year in my painting and I was like, I saw their show and it changed my life. And I was like, hey, can I paint you?
Wow.
I've told this story so many times. Every time I see them, we talk about it. So I painted them. It's on the website. And there are many things about it that I changed me. But one of the bits, the perspective about like being a painter, a portrait artist, is that all portraits are political because you're kind of in the business or you're in the, you're in the business of presenting people, which means that you, even if you're not like a political artist, you're still choosing people that get shown, which means you're not choosing other kinds of people that might get shown. You know what I mean?
I see. But I mean, are you deliberately showing only a certain kind of
that,
people?
Right.
I think that's when it becomes political, right? Or does it become just your, I don't know, your go-to or your comfort?
Of course. And so again, I guess that idea, which was told to me by Busty, who's the leader of the group, we were just chatting about art and stuff. And she said that to me and it kind of blew my mind. And so it was like, it is interesting. It's like, even if you don't actively choose it, you're still participating somewhat in the conversation. And so that probably made me go, well, like, fuck it. Lean in. So I did.
That's crazy how it motivated you to even go further rather than
that's who I am.
Get you a bit more, you know, reluctant. Be like, oh, should I pull back?
I always push back. I'm such a like. don't get me into trouble. But that's how I've always been.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if that's how I've always been, but certainly that was my feeling. Like I always think about how like growing up, in school, people would. Be pretty harsh on me for the way I spoke or how loud I was and all sorts of kid stuff.
Yeah.
You know, one of them was spelling mom with an O instead of a U. And man, I just like, nah, fuck you all the time. You know, or I refuse to put a U in color.
Okay.
You know, because that's how my parents spelled it. So like, so anyway, that kind of pushing back. So maybe there's something in me where I'm like, if, I don't know. Because she said that, I was like, oh, I love that idea. And I really admire her and the stuff she's doing. And so, I really leaned into it. And so, I guess, I don't know why I was saying that, but yes, the work I do has a political angle, and I would say in the kind of most benign version of what I mean by that is I'm always interested in painting people who don't normally get to be kind of, well, painted, part of that conversation about the kinds of people who get painted in the sense of on a gallery wall style. And so my art is all variations on the theme of how can I make my art outcome look as much like academic, fancy, ornate frames as possible, except for the person who's inside it.
Except the other spectrum of
the
person inside it. So
except for the person,
like,
yeah.
It's a cheesy phrase, but like highlighting the unsung heroes or, you know.
Yeah, totally.
Going against it.
Yeah, exactly. And so that takes different kinds of forms. Absolutely. And it hasn't, I guess that kind of, it's changed about like, what I've been interested in or who I've painted or whatever. But yeah. So like, I mean, for example, so with the residency, I did this, worked with a group of Indigenous people, Jabrung mob. And so like they, obviously there aren't a lot of portraits of Indigenous people, like where they get to be in control. That's the other part about being in control of how they get seen. So all the people in my paintings are in control of how they get seen, because that, it's like a lot of representations of people are not made by those people. And so, you know, obviously.
And just.
You don't need me to tell you that, right? Like, it's just that's the thing out there, right?
And,
you know?
And for them, the benefit is they're getting someone from a different cultural background, speaks a different language, has been raised differently to come and show them off in a different light that they're not potentially used to.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and, totally. It's totally,
I mean, that can go either way, but in the end of the day, someone that's taken interest to take time out of their day to create some sort of art, that's always a positive, beautiful thing.
Totally. And I think also if the intent is to share stories and educate in like a really kind of genuine way, I think that's...
So again, it's coming back to that education and doing good. It's a doing good part that I think that's the theme here. Painting... teaching, facilitating, videography, it's good.
It's, yeah, I guess, yeah, I guess, you know, I have...
I think that's the word.
I do have a... I grew up with a sense of, like, righteousness, I guess was the lack of a better word. Like, justice is, like, a word that, like, yeah, that, like, that would, that's what we should do as part of our lives is to make the world better for more people.
Yeah.
You know? How, and like,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's cool. And that's so evident. Like, the more you talk and the more you take us through your journey, like, I think that's the theme that keeps coming up.
Yeah, definitely. But I do want to circle back slightly, because Omar mentioned before it might be redundant to talk about the balance. But the more we're hearing, the more I'm more intrigued about the balance, because, like, yes, everything does, like, everything is for the good. And I guess I'm a UX designer, so I deal with empathy, and I do a lot of research, and I understand how much it can take its toll, just like by the end of the day, like mentally how it can take its toll, and you just sort of need a break to refresh for the next day. So with that sort of stuff in mind, I guess I'm wondering, like, with so much passion from both, like both different avenues, side hustle and projects, artistry, like how do you do it? Like, how do you balance it?
I think one of the things that weirdly helped, there are a couple of things. I mean, I don't know. Okay. One thing. Okay. Here we go. I did really strict time boxing. So I knew that these are going to be like, it's the same 3 days of work every week, the same 3 days of painting every week. Having said that, I didn't I iterated on how that worked. So like a really clear example was that like for a while I'd have some good painting weeks and some bad painting weeks. And one thing I ended up realizing through iteration, like I would do a lot of reflecting on the painting. So I'd finish a painting and be like, okay, cool. What was good about that? What was bad about it? What can I do better? What can I do better? I mean, certainly technically.
What can I do differently?
What can I do differently? How can I make it more fun? A big one for me was like, how can I get to the bit that I love best, which is paint on canvas, as quick as possible? So that led me towards a particular method for taking photos so that I didn't have to spend so long at Photoshop, right? Just like tweaks to make my painting a kind of, my boss calls it hedonism maximizing. I just want it to be as much fun as possible as much of the time, which is essentially how can I just... like have fun with the person paint, right? So that's how I was tweaking my days. And I and obviously because we were working agile, we were kind of doing a similar thing with work, and Will knew about what I was doing. So
big shout out to Will, by the way.
Oh yeah, huge shout out to Will. He's the best. So the thing that I noticed was they were mutually refreshing. So I think if I had, this doesn't make any sense. If I think if I had had the full-time Fitzroy Academy job,
yeah,
it would not have lasted 5 years. 100% I would have burnt out too soon or I would have got bored. And I actually think the same, well, I don't know what I'd be doing with my art, but it wouldn't be what it is now. Mm-hmm. And so what ended up happening, a lot of what happened would be like, so if we go from, let's say I'm finishing a painting and I'm heading into my work week. So if I'm having a stressful time with a painting, something is technically not working, tell you what, spend 3 days not thinking about it.
Absolutely.
And you come back and I'm like, oh, there's no issue here and I'll just finish it. Like, you know, and it really similar, like I'll have a stressful time at work, but you know what? Mm. There's nothing better than just like throwing yourself into painting. And so I think that's one thing that is rather than, I don't know if it helped me maintain the balance, but it actually like the balance, it reinforced itself because it was so helpful in a weird way.
And it's healthy.
It does feel, I mean, I do think like now that I'm a little bit older and I'm in a slightly different phase of my life, it would be amazing. I'm now at a stage where I'm like, you maybe like my family's a little bit more important. So it sounds like I'm like, a little bit more. No, like I'm noticing that like I'm finding it, and maybe COVID changed a few things, but like, I do wish I had 2 days off now is what I'm trying to say. Sure, a little bit more kind of, I guess for an umbrella term, family related, like that part of my life is what I'd like to nurture a little bit. So I've noticed that. So that's like a new thing. But previously, the 3 and 3 has been awesome. And they're mutually kind of beneficial. And like even like I'd had like a summer break, right, from work. And so I spent like 2 full weeks on my art. That actually didn't help. Like I'd get to the end of 2 weeks, I'd be flipping out. Like I'd be like, oh my God, I have to make $1 million on my painting tomorrow. And then I'll get back to work and I'll be like, oh no, it's fine. I can, you know, like
that's
I just stress.
Yeah.
Like not only the stress, it's the stress or just like I get more ideas or I just get too caught up in the painting. It becomes so important that, or is something that just like that adds onto my stress. It's something about my personality. Yeah, I get a bit caught up in it.
Yeah, because I guess when you have that separation, you get to like cherish each of the times. Like you really get to enjoy.
So a little bit of perspective or distance as well.
Absolutely, yeah. Because you're automatically, if you're so into it, there's all these ideas and thoughts that are quite limiting, and you're just bringing up barriers for absolutely no reason.
Yeah.
And then once you go away and stop thinking about it and do something totally different, you come back and you're like, really? That's what stopped me?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it's really interesting. Yeah, exactly. And so like, so that's how it's been up until, I mean, and then, you know, I had two different workplaces. I was really particular about that. I had my art studio where I did my art, and I had my, I was working with like in an office and then at Will's house. So that's where I did my, like, so that was like really artificially separate, that's which really helped
good.
Me.
Yeah.
And then after the residency, I started melding them together. I guess I'd had so much practice.
Yeah.
Like at that point I had, like, I think it was important at the start and less important now. So now I'm all in one place. I mean, we work remotely anyway, we might as well. And so now I'm in the same place 6 days a week and I just split my days and I'm a bit more flexible about, I try not to because it's a bit of a weird vibe, but you know, if I have to take like a work meeting on an art day, then that's fine. Like I used to be like, nah. And now I'm like, well, like I'll try not to, and it's vice versa. And I think now that it's just a bit more, I'm a bit more comfortable doing it. It's like the balance is a little bit easier to make. Oh, and also like film shoots, right? So now both of my things are film shoots essentially.
Right.
And one of the things about film shoots or film production is you have times that are quite busy, like a shoot, right? You're just, it's heaps of prep. And then you're just like 12 hours a day. Like I did a shoot last week and I was up in Aubrey and like, I wasn't shooting every minute of every day, but it's me by myself with this teacher. So I had to manage all the footage and I'm like checking the camera, like, or like I'm doing stuff in the downtime. So that's just like a full on time.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, I'll do the same kind of thing with my painting. Like if I start a new project, I'll do like basically a film shoot with some people. But then there are other times when it's just like in the editing bay or whatever, or at the canvas, which are much more regimented. So I mean, now that I'm better as well, like if I need to take 2 weeks off my painting to do Fizzori Academy stuff, I'll be fine to do that and I won't suffer so much. And usually we just do a kind of a pretty much just a time and lieu. So I can just kind of, I usually would just do 2 weeks and then 2 weeks and they'll be back to normal or whatever. So I was, I guess at the start I was really strict and now I feel like I've got enough comfortable. More sure of myself. I'm more sure of what I want to do for each thing.
Awesome. Especially thinking about like family and wanting to spend more time with family, I guess losing that strictness would be essential.
Super helpful.
But yeah, I think like, cause that's something we've been thinking about a lot lately is like for our side hustles, we do everything at night and we always wonder like we're doing this with like our brain's already been used for the day. Imagine if we had a fresh brain and like, it sounds like that's something that you're getting benefit from as well. You get like that fresh three days kind of thing.
And like, it's interesting that like one of the things that happened is that like, I discovered that the most important time for me to be painting is 9 a.m. on the first day of my painting week. Wow. So that like, because if I'm painting, if I'm in the studio at 8:30, make my coffee, undo my paints, you know, get that ready. 9 a.m. painting.
Yep.
I get enough momentum and I feel good that my whole painting week, my 3 days, is a breeze. And if I don't do that, I just lose momentum. I at least lose the whole 3 days. And so there's something about the fresh brain on the first day of the week where I'm like, it just really sets me up for a really good time. Yep. And if I don't do that, if I have a meeting or I used to try and like, because I just come off my painting, my work week. So I was like, oh, maybe I'll just do my errands first because I had some thoughts. I need to get some paints or whatever I need to do. And after some iterations, I was like, oh, this is not actually helping me. So fresh brains are great.
Definitely.
It's a fresh brain mixed with the focus, mixed on what you want to do first thing when you wake up in the morning. It's so powerful.
One last question before we do that.
Yeah.
And then while you're painting, one last interesting thing. While you're in that zone, so you've set up your paintbrushes, 8:30, had your coffee, you're about to go 9 a.m. Like what's the noise? Like ambient noise? Is there music in the background? Like what does it sound like in the studio at that time?
Oh, good question.
That's a cool question. I listen to music when I paint. I go through phases, but mostly it's movie music, like movie soundtracks.
Because I was
a film kid growing up, I straight up just missed out on all pop culture music because I was like 11 and needing to find music for some weird movie I just made. Wow. So all I was listening to was and those are, I think it's like 11 to 13 are like, that's when everyone makes their music tastes. And so all I was listening to then was movie soundtracks. So I was trying to find music soundtracks for the movies I was making.
So what are you listening to currently?
Yesterday I was listening to Princess Mononoke.
Okay.
You know, the Ghibli movie. All of, I think it's Joe Hisaishi is his name. All of their soundtracks are so good. Really relaxing, really beautiful. Tenet, if you've seen Tenet, this is like Chris Nolan movie. It's like bombastic. It's a really intense soundtrack, but it's very good. Okay. It's really, really good. The other thing I sometimes listen to is, which would change the ambient. It's obviously like that's on my headphones. It doesn't really change the ambient. But sometimes I listen to Broadway tunes. Okay. I sing Broadway songs and I sing.
Interesting.
I do find it calming to be singing.
Yep.
So like I'll either listen to Broadway tunes, sometimes I listen to like classic 80s rock for some reason. Or just like, whatever. Like there for some reason that's my go-to. It's sort of like, it's very embarrassing. Like, I don't even know why I like it. But some of that or like, those are the two main ones. So that would change the ambient because people would hear me tone deafly singing along to something. Some reason that helps me concentrate. I can't tell you why.
For sure. Awesome. We all have our own things.
When
I'm trying to focus, I just listen to jazz. Nothing
but
jazz.
That's so good.
It. That's my focus. That's what I'm typing away and getting shit done. And then when I've had a decent run, then it's just hip hop.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a bit where I was just like nothing but... Is it Janelle Monae.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like nothing but her. And then I moved on to Beyonce. I don't know if it's like Beyonce and then her. It's like a whole, sometimes it'll, and it'll really, it's the interesting part for me is that I get really strong music associations with the paintings. Mm. So, cause I'll just like, you know, like I'll hardcore just listen to like one artist or genre as I'm painting. Sometimes like, if I'm really can do it, I'll try and like match it. So I was painting, making some portraits with these Samoan women. Amazing, amazing women. On the website as well, oilportraits.org.
Nice.
Thank you. And I was chatting to one of them. I was like, well, what kind of music? I mean, she listens to Tupac when she makes the dress. Like, the art was about the Samoan dresses and the women wearing them. Yeah. So she just laughed and she said that she listens to Tupac. But the other thing she listens to is kind of like traditional Samoan kind of quiet choral music.
Mm.
Yeah.
So I listened to some of that when I was painting. I think it comes through in the painting somehow. Because I'm like listening to music that connects.
I keep wanting
to try to kind of like interfere and try to wrap this up. But the more you talk, the more you're getting me thinking.
Yeah, there's so many
as a kid till now, and this is a conversation that I've had with Luke, and I've struggled to understand if this is possible. Can you listen to a soundtrack and then produce a painting, a visual that represents that soundtrack? I'm talking about the lyrics. I'm talking about the chorus. I'm talking about the beat. Or vice versa. Can you look at a painting and be like, yeah, fuck yeah, of course that's Pusha T, you know, such and such. Of that correlation between the two,
yeah.
I'm just like, has anyone done it really well?
Mm.
Or is it just too subjective for someone to associate the two, if you know, you're looking at it from a different angle?
Well, I guess what comes first, the soundtrack, like the visual or the soundtrack?
Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting. It's a really fascinating question, especially like if you think about like the way movies are produced, where like, you know, like, and how the interplay between the soundtrack and the visuals and how that works. I mean, and sometimes the visuals come first, sometimes the soundtrack comes first.
But again, it's an emotive thing, right? Like if you're trying to produce a sad scene, you're going to have a sad song. If it's something happy, you're going to have something happy. But what if it doesn't have anything to do with the feelings at all? It's just based on two different mediums.
Yeah. I mean, I think I try and approach what I do. I'm just thinking how I could... I don't know if it's like 100% possible. I don't think it's... I think it's like... I think what you're saying is like, it's the kind of thing that would get two amazing artists going on something amazing. You know what I mean? Like an amazing musician or songwriter, whatever, an amazing visual artist. I think they cracking their heads together would be able to do something incredible in that field of being like, can you express visuals in a song? Can you express a song in visuals? I think certainly when I collaborate with people, like I'm thinking of getting it. Yeah, you're right. I do have a big laundry list of things I want to do. So as I get into like involving more sound in the paintings I do, because I'm interested in like kind of installations and ways of presenting art.
Mm.
I've already started talking to a composer.
Wow.
And we've already had conversations about, what you can do with music and what you can evoke with music. And I guess we're not thinking about it where like one is the equivalent of the other, but we do want them to kind of mutually reinforce each other in that sense.
I think the way I'm thinking about it is probably too black and white and it's way more involved, because you're right. Yeah, they need to probably get together, have a chat, or even just start vibing. Someone is creating something and the other person is painting something, and then they're kind of vibing off each other and
it builds each other's gems
as they go through. That was just a selfish question that I wanted to...
I think this, you know, honestly, this sounds like something you should do. That's what it means to be an artist, right? Like you have this idea, you know, that you want to explore, you want to like, you have this kind of sense that you can basically... not to say you didn't do a good job with your question, but it sounds to me like there's more in your head than is coming out and conveying to me, which is like a good sign for some good art. Mm. That's a good art ground. If you can explain it, then you're in the right place. Because if you can explain it, like, do you need to make the art? So my challenge to you, I don't know if you're more inclined towards the music or the visuals, whatever, but I think that sounds like the kind of thing that I would love to see you tackle. And then, yeah, then you can like hit me with it, and then we can, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that's what, Leo, it actually might be in the works. You never know. Luke and I are working on something on the side, and it might, you know,
yeah,
might materialize sooner than later. Okay, we've taken up a lot of your time, and we really appreciate you. You've been just a ball of joy. It's been getting great to get to know you. Your passion is very contagious.
Well, thank you.
And
I know you got to wrap up. I just want to cut in. Sorry.
No, it's fine.
No, go for it. Go for it.
I really, do you get this? So when you're making a film, I wonder if it's the same here, or when I'm making a painting, you have this really intense, pretty intimate interaction with people. You know, with me in a painting, it's like one person. If it's a film or with a teacher, it'll be like one person or a couple of people. You have this really intense thing. And then, like, that's it. You know, like, I feel like I had such an amazing time getting to know both of you and, like, getting to really deep dive on something. So it's like, you know, normal everyday life, you don't get to just go straight to, like, intimate stuff with people in this really beautiful way. But then it is like a little bit heartbreaking when it's over. You know what I mean? Well, does that happen to you?
Yeah, well, and that's actually, I won't go too deep into it, but that's actually what we're thinking about. What's the next, what happens next? Because that's what we find. We have all these amazing conversations. We'll
talk to you about it offline. We don't want to announce.
Okay, cool.
But we have amazing conversations, and then, yeah, it's like, we agree. It's like, then what do we do next?
To that point, you're bang on. A lot of our guests we still chat to, we still keep in touch with. But again, not at that level, because I think this is very powerful
and
it can be built upon and things can be created.
Yeah.
But anyways, we won't get into that just yet. What is that, okay, that piece of advice that you'd give someone who's looking to, who's stuck in somewhere, or maybe they're not enjoying something, or, you know, someone who's probably trying to find themselves, or someone who's got a passion and they're trying to push it beyond their day job. You know, is there any advice that you can kind of share with us?
Yeah. So good on you is what I think is the first bit of advice. It's such a, we live in a generally speaking, a society that frowns upon creativity and really doesn't do a good job to support it. So I think if that's in your mind, then that's already a good start. First step. I'm really aware that I was very lucky, and there's probably a bit of there's some privilege showing in my bit of advice. So I just bear that in mind. So I don't know, because I never want this, I never want to come across as preachy or anything, but I'll just tell you what happened to me that I think was the key thing. So I think it was, honestly, back to big shout out to Will, it was the day job. So my advice is, if you're in a job that you don't particularly like and you're able to push for it and afford it financially, which I was, that's what I'm saying, is I was lucky enough. I was living by myself, you know, I was living in a share house. Like, I could do it.
Yeah.
Move down to 4 days, even 5 to 4. If you can do that, amazing. If you do 4 to 3 and you can make it work, that's incredible. So that's my advice to somebody who, if you're in a job where you can take less shifts, or you're able to, in a contract, you can just like bump down your hours. Maybe after COVID it's going to be a bit easier for some people. I think fundamentally having the security of a permanent job, which I know is also really hard to come by right now, but also the fact that it's not a full-time job. I think that was a huge benefit for me.
Just buying your time back.
Just getting some of your time back. Alternatively, my advice is, if you are thinking of pursuing something creative and you want to work out a way to make it work, get a job. Like, if you can.
To supplement.
Like, either way, it was both. It was that bit of time that helped me with the financial stability to not need to, like, sell paintings or whatever. And also the fact that it wasn't 5 days a week. So, and that's like a hard thing to come by, but I think it's maybe worth, I recommend it as a thing to aim for. I think maybe some people creatively feel like it's like all or nothing. You know, like I have friends who maybe are like wanting to do illustration and they're sort of things that they try and do to get jobs are contract work or graphic design work. And I think that's pretty crushing because you're too close to the thing you want to do, but you're not doing it.
Yep.
So I got a job that was quite different at the time. It's now less different, but at the time, quite different 3 days a week. So I don't know. That's obviously hard advice to be like, go get a perfect job. But if you can do it, hopefully that helps.
But it's not just getting the perfect job. It's that mindset shift. You went into it going, this isn't for me.
Right. That's true. Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. So
you've had to shift your mind and kind of make compromises until you got to the point of going, shit, I'm using my previous skills of filmmaking to introduce into this thing. And now it's actually fueling my art. And then my art is fueling my day job. And it's just like back and forth.
That is true. But yeah, and that's a good point. It wasn't particularly exciting at the time, other than the fact I like Will. Other than that, it was just a job. So yeah. Yeah, hopefully that's useful advice for somebody. Definitely. I hope so.
No.
Yeah, I think so, because cool. It also sort of saying to me, you've also got to sort of pay your dues in a way a little bit as well. Like you can't just expect to be able to do your art and live off it type thing. Like pay your dues in the sense of like earn your money to be able to support it and then eventually transition across to full-time if you can or whatever that might be.
Totally. And even like more than just like paying your dues, I didn't know what the fuck I like wanted to do with my art. Like, and I think that was a mistake I learned in LA, because you get stuck in, it's very easy to get stuck in like channels or whatever in LA. Yeah. Like if you're in this department, that's the department you're in. And so going into my art, I was very aware that the pool, especially as you start taking paid gigs, if that pulls you towards, you take that job, you get more of that job, right? Like if that's the kind of, therefore, if that's not the work you want to do, then it's very easy to get trapped. Mm. So, maybe paying your dues are one way of saying, I guess I'm just like, I'm thinking also the thing that was useful was that like, I could just let my art, I could just do whatever in my art and like to work out what I wanted. And so now, if I was, as I try and find money and funding for the bigger projects I'm doing, I know definitely what I'm doing and I definitely know what I'm interested in doing, which I think was really helpful as well.
Mm. So you gave yourself that chance to let it free flow a bit.
As opposed to like, if you can get
a bit inside your head, force it, and then just be put off it very quickly.
Mm. Yeah, or like you find yourself doing a job that you're like, so the work isn't particularly what you wanted to do. You know, you wanted to be a filmmaker, but you're doing ads or you're whatever it is.
I see.
Surely there's like a UX version of that where you're like, you wanted to work on, you know, something and you're just working on something crap. The job that was quite different was really useful, I think, as well.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I usually forget this part, but before we call it, plug yourself and what's with your socials, your website, everything.
So,
did I get it right, Luke, this time?
You did.
Good. So good. I love it. Okay. So oilportraits.org is my website. Check it out. I hope you enjoy the art that's on there. There's a mailing list on there if you're interested in my art. The best social, I'm bad at all, but the best one is Portraits by Leo. And I think it's definitely my Instagram. So just go to my Instagram. I've just started putting stuff on it again now that I can be bothered. And like I'm trying again. Yeah. So Portraits by Leo Instagram.
Is that the one with the portrait of you?
It sure is one. If you don't know what I look like, they won't help you. Big beard. And oilportraits.org is my website. They're the two main things. Yeah, that's where it's all happening.
And what about some of your video work? Is that on YouTube, Vimeo?
It's going to be on YouTube really soon, but it's Fitzroy Academy. So fitzroyacademy.com or you can just go to Fitzroy Academy YouTube.
I was talking about your projects from back in the day.
Oh,
if someone wants to echo.
Sorry.
Oh, the metal band. The metal band one,
The metal band one. No, that one is you have to become very good friends with me and then you have to get me really drunk.
Okay.
Yes.
Get him really drunk, buy one of his paintings, and then you can get access to the
the treasure trove of all the video. I actually have a secret Dropbox that has all of my old high school movies in it, but you really have to be good friends with me to get to see them.
What about the feature film? Is that anywhere?
I hope that it's on my Dropbox still. We didn't sell it for distribution, which is how it would be seen somewhere else. No, it is okay where it is. It was an amazing experience for all of us, but it is, doesn't need to be watched for it to be an amazing thing.
Yeah. Leo, we don't know where to start to thank you, man. This has been
thank you so much.
Thank you so much. You're the best.
This has been so cool. This is a Monday night. It's miserable outside. We're just humbled that you can join us here and tell us your story. It's been awesome.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It was the best.
Awesome. Well, we look forward to sharing this with our audience. They're going to have a blast with this.
Awesome.